figured only these two really met.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Wednesday, June 28th, 2017. I'm opening a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. We have a very busy agenda today, as everybody's aware. I want to remind everybody, every single one of these bills has had at least one hearing and a work session in a policy committee. We are not here to discuss policy. We are here to discuss fiscal. I've already talked to advocates and opponents of some of the bills and reminded them of that fact. I am hoping that we don't have to start timing testimony, but I will warn everybody that if people are not thoughtful and concise, we will have to start timing testimony. So just please bear that in mind, because we're trying the last couple of days of this hearing, this committee meeting, so we're just going to hope to keep really efficient. All right? With that, I'm opening a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3391. Ms. Ames.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3391 does really three different things. It requires that health benefit plan coverage covers specified services, drugs, devices, products, and procedures related to reproductive health, all without cost share. It also requires OHA to implement a program to reimburse the cost of services related to reproductive health to individuals who would be eligible for medical assistance except for immigration status. And finally, the program includes medical coverage for these same individuals for 60 days after birth. There are certain exemptions that apply for plans sold to religious employers, as well as for abortion services if an insurer excludes that benefit in all of its plans. On OLIS, you will see there's two amendments. The dash A9 is a policy amendment, and the dash A10 is simply the A9s with the fiscal incorporated. It's the A10s that we would adopt, but that way you can actually see the peer policy amendment that some of you may have worked on. The A10, or really the A9, amendment directs OHA in consultation with DCBS to design a program to provide statewide access to abortion coverage for Oregon residents enrolled in health plans where abortion is excluded. And finally, the appropriation is included for a little over $10 million general fund.
Great. We have on the list, I'm going to start with Laurel Swordlow from Planned Parenthood to kick us off, and then after her, I'll have Roger Martin and Colm Willis. But Ms. Swordlow.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laurel Swordlow. I am Advocacy Director for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon, here on behalf of the Pro-Choice Coalition of Oregon in favor of House Bill 3391, the Reproductive Health Equity Act. As we've discussed now in both chambers, HB 3391 establishes equity and access to the full spectrum of reproductive health services for all Oregonians. I believe LFO has sufficiently summarized the details of the bill, and as you said, Senator, we're not here to further discuss policy. I'd like to briefly highlight the cost benefits secured by investing in HB 3391. Studies consistently show that in the long run, for every $1 public investment in family planning, the state saves over $7. And we anticipate over time the state will reap savings of that magnitude thanks to this bill. The fiscal submitted by LFO shows that OHA conservatively estimates the state will save approximately $1.4 million this biennium by providing coverage for postpartum care alone. Using the same analytical tools and data that OHA used, we estimate that the state will save upwards of $23 million in medical and insurance costs in the 2017-19 biennium as a result of the program established in this bill in Section 5. Even these estimates are conservative, as they do not include savings accrued by the state due to saved dollars in non-medical state programs, and they additionally do not include long-term savings and positive economic benefits. HB 3391 is therefore not only sound and just policy, but a substantive and important investment in the health and economic security of Oregon, needed now more than ever. I thank you, and I am happy to take any questions.
Questions for this witness? Thank you very much, Ms. Swordlow. Roger Martin and Colm Willis, come on up.
Does she want this? Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I represent the Oregon Catholic Conference. That's the two dioceses of Oregon, the one east of the mountains and the one west of the mountains. It would come as no surprise to anybody in the room. We object to the bill because of the abortion part of it. I will stick to two things at your instructions. Number one, we're very concerned how this limits our ability to buy insurance because we're not going to buy insurance that mandates abortion coverage. And the religious clause in here is weak and does not take care of our problems. The second item, and I think everybody in this room ought to be concerned about it, if House Bill 3391 would, if it does pass, will probably violate the federal law, the Weldon Amendment. If it passes, it could put all federal funding for health that we so depend on at risk. And given the administration in Washington, D.C., you all ought to be concerned about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Mr. Willis?
Co-Chair Steiner-Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of this committee. My name is Cullen Willis. I'm an attorney with Lynch, Conger, McLean, and I'm here at the request of Oregon Right to Life to ask you to oppose the bill and to oppose the amendments to the bill, the policy amendments that have been proposed. House Bill 3391, as amended, would force nearly all health benefit plans offered in this state to cover abortion. And this mandate violates the rights of pro-life Oregonians, especially the rights of people who offer health benefits plans in our state or who may wish to do so in the future. Although the amendments that have been proposed would narrowly exempt certain entities who currently offer health benefit plans that do not cover abortion, this language isn't enough. Even if the committee includes the proposed amendments, this bill would still coerce many people and entities into paying for abortion against their will. Oregonians deserve to be free from government coercion that would force us to violate our deeply held belief that every person has inherent value. But this bill would force Oregonians to pay for the killing of developing babies. Here in Oregon, we live with many people who are different than us, and that's part of what makes this a great place to live. And one of our fundamental values as Oregonians is tolerance for people who are different than us. But this bill, as amended, would violate that principle in a profound way. Moreover, as Roger said, when public dollars are tight, even with the amendments, this bill would put Oregon's federal funding in jeopardy. The Weldon Amendment, which is a piece of federal law that's been included in every labor and health and human services appropriation bill enacted since 2004, specifically prohibits what House Bill 3391 would do, as amended. The Weldon Amendment states that none of the funds made available in this act may be available to a state or local government if such government subjects any institutional or individual health care entity to discrimination on the basis that the health care entity does not provide coverage of abortions. Further, the law defines the term health care entity to specifically include a health insurance plan. The Weldon Amendment is enforceable by the Department of Health and Human Services, and the penalty for violating the Weldon Amendment is the loss of federal funds. In short, this bill violates our common value of tolerance. It violates the rights of developing babies here in Oregon. It violates the deeply held beliefs of pro-life Oregonians, and it violates federal law. We ask that you oppose this House bill as amended. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for either of these witnesses? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Okay. I don't see anybody other witnesses signed up. Is there anybody else who wished to testify on 3391? I want to thank all three of you for keeping your testimony short and concise and clear. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I would entertain a motion. Yeah, Madam Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash A-10 amendment.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves adoption of the Dash A-10 amendment to House Bill 3391. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? Representative Bueller objects. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, move House Bill 3391 as amended by the Dash A-10 amendment and be moved to the full committee with a pass recommendation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves House Bill 3391 as amended by the Dash A-10 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there Representative Bueller?
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. I'm going to be in opposition, even though I'm one of the rare pro-choice Republicans, I think, in a time when we're cutting services to the elderly, veterans, our K-12 schools, and we're increasingly hard-pressed to maintain Medicaid coverage for people in Oregon, I just can't justify spending millions more to create a program for new beneficiaries. So,
thank you, Representative. Thank you. Okay. Then I'll assume Representative is going to object to the motion. Any other objections to the motion? Okay. Representative Bueller objects. So moved. Thank you. Representative Williamson will carry this to full into the House floor. Senator Devlin will open and all close in the Senate. Okay, closing the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3391, opening a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 558. Ms. Ames.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 558 modifies eligibility requirements for the Health Care of All Oregon Children program to make all children who reside in Oregon eligible for medical assistance, regardless of immigration status, if family income is at or below 300% of federal poverty level. The bill also requires the Oregon Health Authority to establish a work group to advise the agency on outreach and marketing. The Dash 2 amendment, which is posted, changes the effective date of the bill to January 1, 2018, and includes an appropriation of a little over $36 million general fund.
Thank you. We've got Linda Roman and Amy Favre signed up. Come on up, please, ladies.
Good morning. Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, and members of the committee. My name is Linda Roman. I'm the Director of Health Policy and Government Relations for the Oregon Latino Health Coalition. Thank you today for the time on the agenda, and I'll stick to the piece of the amendment. So Coverall Kids Senate Bill 558 with the Dash 2 amendment continues Oregon's commitment to ensure that all children come to school healthy and prepared to learn. Particularly, the Dash 2 amendment appropriates funds to the Oregon Health Authority to extend the Health Care for All Children of Oregon program to all kids residing in the state. The Dash 2 amendment calculates for 18 months of the 2017 to 2019 biennium starting on January 1st of 2018 as a start date. This means that children in our state will no longer suffer from preventable illness or death. And by the end of the biennium, this program will reach up to 14,928 children across the state in rural and urban cities. This also ensures a streamlined outreach and marketing effort to maximize enrollment. Coverall Kids is a positive step for all children in Oregon, and I just want to thank the over 90 organizations that came together to support Coverall Kids. This coalition includes carriers, providers, CCOs, who were willing to come to the table with community-based organizations, and this coalition really is a product of coming together to find a solution that works to benefit all children in our state. So thank you all for your work on behalf of children. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Favre.
Good morning, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield, members of the committee. My name is Amy Favre. I'm the Director of Government Relations at Kaiser Permanente. And Kaiser is pleased to be here today to support Senate Bill 558 to ensure that all kids have access to the health care that they need to thrive. Kaiser Permanente and our colleagues across the health care system stepped up recently to raise the funding needed to shore up the Medicaid program, the Oregon Health Plan. As an integrated system and a payer of the provider tax, as a hospital system ourselves, as an insurer, we are payers of the premium tax, and we are also a member of HealthShare, HealthShare Oregon, and we are therefore part of the CCO piece of this as well. We were active in the negotiations to determine the revenue package to fill this hole. Collectively, the healthcare industry advocated to solve to a budget number that included the cost of Coverall Kids. And that was something that we all held very firmly to throughout the negotiations. And while that didn't exactly happen, we knew that there were additional dollars in the amount of money raised through the Medicaid revenue package that could be used toward this. And we continued to advocate that those extra dollars be used to fund this very important program because we thought it was the right thing to do. We are pleased again to see that that is happening today and that additional dollars have been found to allow for implementation of this starting on January 1st. The data is clear that this is a smart investment in Oregon's kids, and I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Buehler.
So will the funds that are spent on this program be matched with federal dollars?
Co-chairs, Representative Buehler, there's no federal match for this program.
Question?
Please.
And are you familiar with the services provided at federally qualified health clinics?
Co-chairs, Representative Buehler, yes, I think that what we have seen in our experience is that some of the preventative care that is offered is simply not enough. We know this from 2009. One of the reasons why we created the Healthy Kids Program was to ensure that kids didn't have episodic care, that they were able to seek care when they needed it. And so this continues for the same reasons that we created the Health Care for All Children of Oregon program in 2009.
Please. Clarification. So you're saying that the children covered by your proposal now currently can't go to federally qualified health clinics on a regular basis?
Co-chairs, Representative Buehler, children can go based on their sliding scale, income sliding scale, can go to community-based federally qualified health centers currently. The care, it has a scope around preventative care, and so additional care that is beyond that preventative care is not currently within the scope of practice of the federally qualified health centers.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay, I don't see any other witnesses signed up. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 558? Okay, we've opened a work session. Representative Rayfield, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, moved out to the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 558.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 558. Is there further discussion? Is there opposition? Representative Buehler objects. So moved. Oops, sorry, you had a discussion. I apologize.
Thank you. Similarly, you know, I think as we struggle to pay for the programs that we've already made promises to people, now we're creating another program, spending billions on new beneficiaries, making more promises, while we're cutting services for veterans, K through 12, education, kids in foster care, abused kids. I think we need to prioritize keeping existing promises and services, and especially those that are matched with federal funds. And these children currently can access the healthcare system through federally qualified health clinics, which are paid for mostly by federal funds. So I think this is not good policy.
Representative, I appreciate your concerns, but at the risk of getting more criticism for reminding people that I'm a primary care physician, which has been a common theme lately, I would point out that, as you well know, preventive services only get you so far when you have a child with a significant chronic illness that doesn't necessarily require inpatient care, but does require the care of various subspecialists who don't provide care in federally qualified health centers and may prevent kids from going to school, learning, and becoming more productive members of our community. The other point I would make out is that these two bills that we've just passed combined have a total price tag of under $45 million, so it's nowhere close to billions. I appreciate your concern. I have similar concerns, but I just want to be sure we're clear about the actual numbers that we're talking about. Okay, Representative Malmstrom.
And just a little bit of a pile on to clarify. In my public health career, my office is located in a federally qualified health center, and we saw daily kids come in and having to be turned away because they had complex needs that couldn't be served there. It kind of breaks your heart, frankly, and so that's wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you. Okay, the motion on the table is to adopt the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 558. Objection? Representative Buehler, please note. Motion carries.
And Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 558 as amended to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves Senate Bill 558 as amended by the dash 2 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Opposition? Representative Buehler. Thank you. Motion carries. I'll take this to full. Senator Cruz will take it to the Senate floor. And who's taking this to the House? Who's the House chief sponsor?
House of Care.
I think it's Representative Huffman who's the chief.
Excuse
sponsor.
Me?
Co-chairs. Representative Huffman.
Representative Huffman.
Yeah.
Representative Huffman will take this to the House floor. Thank you very much. Okay. Close that public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 558. Open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 944. And we have on the list Robin Henderson and Cheryl Ramirez. You might as well come up while Ms. Toe is introducing us.
Okay. Madam Chair. members of the committee. Before you, Senate Bill 944, it directs the Oregon Health Authority to contract with an Oregon-based nonprofit organization with expertise to operate a 24-hour call center to track and provide information with available placement settings for children and adolescents needing high acuity behavioral health services. The call center will also implement processes for service providers to submit data that can be used to assess and monitor daily statewide capacity for providing high acuity behavioral health services to children and adolescents, as well as recording when the first contact with the call center took place. In addition, the bill establishes a Youth Acute Behavioral Health Leadership Council in the governor's office, charged with making recommendations for the alignment of resources and funding and policies among agencies serving children and adolescents. It comes to you from the Senate Committee on Human Services, where it had two public hearings and work session. And there is a fiscal impact. OHA estimates a contract to operate the call center to be about $400,000 general fund. And you do have a -3 amendment that's posted on OLIS. The amendment removes the requirement to establish the Youth Acute Behavioral Health Leadership Council, and it includes $400,000 general fund appropriation for the health authority contract and operate this call center.
Thank you, ladies.
Senator Hayward, Rep. Rayfield, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Robin Henderson, and I come to you today as vice chair of the board of directors for NAMI Oregon. So I come with my advocacy hat on today, speaking on behalf of all of the NAMI members who struggle every day with how they receive services for children and families. Every night, children with acute mental health issues go to sleep in emergency departments, juvenile halls, hotels, and other places that are ill-equipped to deal with their needs. And virtually every night, there are empty beds in the residential subacute and acute provider system because there's no single place where those beds can be coordinated. In the medical field, we call this a bed board. And what we are proposing as providers and advocates is to pull together a single unified bed board that would allow us to get the right kids into the beds every night as best we can as a system. As providers, Youth Villages, Albertina Kerr, Trillium Family Services, Unity, and Providence, we've worked together for months to come up with a solution. We feel that this is the highest and best use of state dollars at this time that will help us resolve a need immediately, and we are asking for your support with a due pass recommendation to the full Ways and Means.
Thank you. Ms. Ramirez.
Good morning, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Rayfield, members of the committee. I'm Cheryl Ramirez. I'm the director of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs. And although we certainly agree with the goal of this bill, we don't support the bill. We believe it's Oregon Health Authority's role as the system, the statewide system manager. OHA already has the prerogative to contract out certain system responsibilities, and we would be supportive of that as long as the contractor has clear deliverables and OHA retains its oversight. Just one sentence on policy. System problems require system solutions, and we will need to relieve the bottlenecks and barriers in other parts of the system in order to really resolve this problem. Also, I understand that DHS is working on a bed registry of their own, and this would be a perfect opportunity for Oregon Health Authority and DHS to pool their resources and efforts and work on a common bed registry. This is also a great opportunity to address the problems for children who have both developmental disabilities and behavioral health disorders so that we can work together, the two agencies and all of our behavioral health and DD system partners, to make sure those children get into, it's not a yours or mine, but it's our children who get into proper settings and get the services they need. Considering this budget climate, and I've been in the DHS budget hearings last couple of days, it doesn't seem like there's any new funding, and so we would not be supportive of new initiatives. If anything, if there's ever any extra money, we would support funding early intervention in the communities, parent training, A&D, treatment for parents, and a host of other early interventions that work in the communities. So again, we appreciate the proponent's goal, and we'd like to work with them on solutions with our partners and with the state agencies who are really concerned about this, not only DHS and OHA, but I know OYA and ODE also are very concerned about this. Thank you for the opportunity to express our concerns.
Madam Chair.
Our OHA and OIA here to, I just always get concerned when others speak for people that aren't here.
I see OHA, I don't know if I see anybody from OIA. Mr. Black, do you want to come up and join us? Is there anybody from OIA here? I don't see any hands being raised. Okay, Mr. Black.
For the record, Justin Black from the Oregon Health Authority. Co-Chair Rayfield, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward. The agency has no position on this bill. I think we have generally been in supportive of this concept. I know advocates have come to us with concerns around how tightly worded the contracting piece of the bill is written, that it would not be an expansive list of contractors that we could reach out to. Other than that, I don't think we have much to say about the bill.
Thank you very much for that clarification. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for this panel? Okay, thank you all very much. I appreciate it. My co-chair went over there, but he can come back. I think we do know what. I was just trying to clarify. Senator Brzezinski was here for. It's the dash.
It's the A3, right?
A3?
Yeah.
That we're running? Okay.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I move down to the dash.
A3.
Yeah, the dash A3 amendment.
Thank you. Co-chair Rayfield moves the dash A3 amendment to Senate Bill 944. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? If not, so moved.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 944 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves Senate Bill 944 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Wheeler?
Yeah. I just think this is an excellent idea. I think it's long time in coming, and every single week in the Bend ER, there are kids stuck there. You know, and if they weren't having behavioral health crises before they arrived in the Bend ER, they certainly do after 4 or 5 days, literally in a white padded room. It's completely unacceptable, and hopefully this will go at least part of the way to solving this problem.
Thank you very much. Okay, further discussion? Okay, motion carries. We'll have Senator Winters take this to full, Senator Gelser to the Senate floor, and Representative Kenny Geyer to the House floor, please. Okay, close that public hearing and work session. Open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2198. Okay, come on up, Senator Brzezinski. Welcome. Ms. Tover introduces this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2198 establishes a 9-member Oregon Cannabis Commission within the Oregon Health Authority. OHA is directed to provide staff support to the commission. The bill charges the commission with determining a possible framework for the future governance of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. The commission is required to report its finding and recommendation to the legislature by December 15, 2017. In addition, the Oregon Cannabis Commission is required to provide advice to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, OLCC, regarding the medical regarding medical marijuana. The bill also modifies statutes relating to marijuana grow sites, including allowing marijuana grow sites to transfer up to 20 pounds of usable marijuana per year to a recreational marijuana processor or wholesaler if certain conditions are met. The bill authorizes OLCC to issue an order of temporarily reduce or suspend the amount of marijuana that can be transferred to the recreational market if the market doesn't correct itself. And the measure comes to you from the Joint Committee on Marijuana Regulation, where it's had 5 public hearings and a work session. And there is a cost estimate of supporting the commission, $250,000 general fund. And you do have 2 amendments. The dash 37A37 amendment is a conflict amendment that with SB 1057. And the dash 39 amendment repeals the advisory committee on medical marijuana, which would be redundant with the Cannabis Commission established in this bill. And it also reduces the frequency of meetings for the commission to at least monthly to at least quarterly. And it appropriates $250,000 general fund to the Oregon Health Authority.
Thank you. And Senator, for just one moment, if you'll indulge me, I would remind people, because I think some of you came in after I made this announcement, this is a fiscal hearing, not a policy hearing. I see 5 people signed up to testify in support of this bill. The bill's going to pass, folks. And I see a lot of written testimony that's been submitted. So you're welcome to testify, but I urge you to keep it short. And if somebody's already said what you're going to say, please don't say it again. It's had, as you heard, 5 public hearings already. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and committee members. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to present House Bill 2198. I'm Floyd Brzozinski, State Senator, District 4, includes parts of Lane and Douglas counties. This is our major work for the Marijuana Committee on the medical side for this session. As you probably know, the committee has been impaneled for three sessions now. This is taking care of some of the issues that we felt is very important for the medical community on the cannabis issues. What it does, in fact, will do is actually establish the Oregon Cannabis Commission. This is going to be a vital central part to ensure that input is coming in from those who are directly impacted by the medical marijuana program, and giving us, the legislature, direct information from this commission. It will be staffed by the Oregon Department of Health, Oregon Health Authority. That is the reason for the Dash 39 amendments, is to ensure that we have a smooth transition for the commission from the committee that has been, which is the Advisory Committee on Medical Marijuana. Specifically on the Dash 39s, it does, in fact, as Committee Services has stated, remove the monthly requirement for meetings to quarterly. This is to help keep the cost down. It also will repeal out the advisory committee, because the commission will be doing that work. That is where I believe the funding is coming forward, as to basically a shift in the money from the advisory committee to the commission. I know that you're very busy. I will just point out two parts that I feel that are very important to this legislation is the commission itself, and also there is a transfer that will allow for limited amount of marijuana to be transferred into the OLCC system. It should be noted that you have to be a grower of 13 plants or more. No mom and pops can actually sell into the recreational market. This means there's less than 5,000 individuals who could participate if they have access. There is a requirement for those individuals to declare to OLCC their intent to sell in. The reality, though, is that this has a check and balance in place that would require a retail wholesaler or a retail processor willing to purchase the offered excess into the market. What this means is that a grower that qualifies to make a transfer into the recreational market cannot and will not be able to sell directly to a retail outlet. I want to call that to your attention, because the reason for that is that we wanted to ensure for those who actually have gone into the OLCC system that they will, in fact, have the advantage to be able to sell directly at retail level to the outlets. And this is a way to ensure that there's not a overflow. Plus, OLCC has the ability and authority under the bill to basically limit or to restrict any sales into the retail market based on any saturation. So that is what we have. The last part, I think, on the commission is that it will, in fact, as I mentioned, allow for the discussion that needs to occur to ensure that we're taking care of patients. Realize that the one part for the on the transfer, you do, in fact, need to understand that there are a number of individual growers who left the medical program and are now in the retail program. This has caused a shortage of growers for patients, and that is why we wanted to ensure there would be some likelihood of being able to make these transfers. The transfers themselves cannot occur until, I believe it's 2018, if I'm not mistaken.
Thanks. Question for the Senator. Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Just a quick, not a policy question, but on the fiscal aspect of this, $350,000 general fund dollars in our environment today. We've been in positions of cutting reading programs and things. Why is this general fund versus a other funds or a fee-based type funding?
All right. Thank you for the question, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, and Representative Hayden. It's my understanding, first of all, it's clarity. The Dash 39 reduces the amount to $250,000. And dealing with co-chair Nathanson over the weekend, I explained to her that the that there was already funding that's coming from the advisory committee on the medical marijuana that could be utilized. The general fund allocation, I do not know if that is where that money is coming from or if this is a different fund that they're looking at. I will point out that at currently they're under the medical program. We, the legislature, have taken $18 million out of the program where individual patients have paid their fees to the program to fund other type of OHA programs. So there was some discussion about this being absorbed within the OHA, and I'm assuming based on the work of co-chair Nathanson, this is what they determined was the appropriate way to move forward at this time.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Ms. Toe, can you help us with that question as well, please?
Madam Chair, Representative. Basically, it's just a budgeting function. The projected marijuana revenue for the 2017-19 has already been dedicated to public health programs. So if they were to use that money to support this commission, we would have to backfill the funding for the public health programs that were already directed for this, so that's why the general.
Okay, well, thank you, but that still puts pressure on everything else. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you.
Okay, Oscar Nelson, Rob Bovet, Anthony Johnson, come on up.
Madam Co-Chair, someone lost a button. I don't know if it's a lucky button.
Okay. Thank you very much. If anybody who's testified today already lost a button, come on up and get it at some point.
Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. Good bill should pass. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bovet. Nicely done. Please.
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Anthony Johnson, Director of New Approach Oregon, the political action committee responsible for the legalization Measure 91. The Measure 91 and legalizing, regulating, taxing marijuana has brought in over $60 million for the state already. House Bill 2198 will bring more people in the regulated system, in the long term will protect us from federal interference by bringing more people into the regulated system, and in the end will have a positive fiscal impact. Good bill should pass.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Hi, co-chairs, representatives. My name is Oscar Nelson. I'm with Sweet Relief and with the Oregon Cannabis Association. I definitely want to back up the point of the protection with the federal government from the medical product coming in. A little bit of history. When prohibition ended in Oregon, the medical marijuana program stepped in and filled the gap before the regulatory system could fill the needs of Oregonians. After REC came through, those market gaps were filled by OLCC-regulated businesses. The market has stabilized. Letting more product come in from the medical side and using state funds to do this is very inefficient use of our Oregon money. The market is full, and it is filling, and by 2018, more and more of these relationships with regulated OLCC businesses will be established. I, on one hand, feel that this is going to be a good thing for my dispensary because prices are going to plummet with more product coming in an already full market. But again, this is inefficient use of funds. This is unneeded, and I feel that this is giving Oregonians a false perception because I have had multiple people in my garden store and dispensary thinking that they're going to be able to supplement their income by a guaranteed 20 pounds a year brought into the OLCC system. This is like having homebrew beer circumventing the brewery standards from OLCC and being sold in Safeway. Please reconsider this. There's more impact besides the fiscal aspect. This is inefficient use of funds. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
I'll just have a comment. Before
Certainly,
we close.
Representative.
Okay.
Please, go ahead, if you want.
So, again, we're not so much into the policy, but the fiscal side of this, you know, when we had the Measure 91 and these things passed, you know, were supported by voters, but I think the intent was that those funds would come from self-generating funds, and I'm concerned that we're taking $250,000 now out of general fund to do this, and there obviously are some other policy concerns, but that would be my objection to the bill, is the lack of not staying to what I thought was a commitment to be a self-generating funding rather than coming from general funds, which of course puts pressure on everything else we try and do, particularly in self-sufficiency.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Representative Leininger, did you wish to testify on this bill? Come on up.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ann Leininger, State Representative for Lake Oswego and Southwest Portland. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2198. As amended, it is an essential element of a negotiated compromise over the course of this legislative session that enabled us to both support enhanced tracking of legal cannabis in Oregon to make sure that we're in compliance with the Cole memo. And this bill will enable us to take some additional steps to ensure that we have a legal market, but also support the integrity of and a reasonable future for the medical market, which, as you know, has been an ongoing element of this work. So you've heard about the creation of the commission, the ability to transfer up to 20 pounds from the medical market into the OLCC-regulated market. OLCC gets the opportunity to do some immediate suspension in the event they suspect illegal activity. It's the key message that I have is that this is part of a carefully negotiated, balanced package of steps that will enable our legal cannabis sector to move forward and will allow people who've been in the medical production and medical patient sector to have reasonable access to products. So I strongly encourage you to support this. And I think that the medical patients pay so much in registration fees, and the medical producers do that. Within that context, the idea of some of that resource being used to support costs in this program, it's hard for me to see that as somehow co-opting general fund. They generate so much of this money that is used for broad other purposes totally unrelated to marijuana. It would be great for us to be able to fund this commission and the important work set forth in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the representative? Thank you very much, Representative. Okay. Mike Rockland, Anthony Taylor, and Sarah Duff. Super quick, ladies and gentlemen. Whoever sits down can start.
Hello, my name is Sarah Duff, co-chairs and members of the committee. Sarah Duff, I am the owner of Duff Johnson Consulting, a compliance firm, and a policy analyst for New Approach Oregon. I support this bill because it will allow people that have been priced out of the market to be able to be a part, and also many people have been zoned out. I believe this bill is going to allow for more taxes to be paid in Oregon, because if all of the medical product was going to stay with just medical marijuana patients, no taxes are paid. If we do allow for this to pass, then that will be more taxable marijuana in the system, which I believe is better for Oregon. It will support the legal market instead of the illicit or underground market. So please pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rockland.
Thank you very much. Mike Rockland. For the record, public health, licensed healthcare professional, and primarily what I'd like to talk about with fiscal impact is the healthcare impact is going to have. $250,000 is a small change compared to what we're going to be able to do. The primary purpose of the Oregon Cannabis Commission is to help with research that has been prohibited for over 50 years. So I believe our state, as well as state of Washington and California now, leading in the whole United States in terms of research with this cannabis commission. And what was said before about fiscal is very critical. $18 million has been allocated for other programs, which we need to have. However, this one will be paying for itself. In addition to, I will guarantee we're going to see impact to the healthcare outcomes in this state as we go forward with better, safe, legal access. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, my name is Anthony Taylor with Compassionate Oregon. The funding request for this bill of $250,000 is the funding that this commission really needs to get off to a great start.
to finally have a commission that will report back to the legislature on the status of this program is essential, and I would urge the committee to support the bill.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Okay, thank you all very, very much. Anybody else wishing to testify on this bill? Okay, Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the Dash A37 Amendment to House Bill 2198.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves adoption of the A37 Amendment to House Bill 2198. Discussion. That's the conflict amendment, folks. Opposition? Representative Hayden. So moved.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the Dash A39 Amendment to House Bill 2198.
Co-Chair Rayfield moves adoption of the A39 Amendment to House Bill 2198. Is there further discussion? Is there opposition? Representative Hayden. Motion carries.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2198 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Rayfield moves House Bill 2198 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? Representative Bueller, Representative Hayden. Representative Bueller, I thought you said you wanted this bill. I'm confused.
2198?
The Canvas Commission that you said just...
No, I think this...
Okay, it doesn't matter. I'm just confused because I thought you said something about it being a good idea. I apologize. No. Okay, never mind. I apologize.
No, I apologize.
There's so many bills running, so many bills, I got confused.
I think it's very disruptive to the...
I apologize.
I think it's
I
very disruptive to the market.
My bad.
I think it gives unfair advantages to the medical marijuana producers. So.
Okay, sorry about that. I apologize. I got confused. We're running a lot of bills this morning. Okay, Hayden and Bueller object. Motion carries. Representative Rayfield, can you take this to full, please?
I'd love to.
I knew you would. And then we'll have Senator Przanski take it in the Senate and Representative Leininger in the House. Okay, close that public hearing and work session. I'm going to hand this over to my colleague because I'm going down to testify.
All right. We'll open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3261. We'll call up Representative Nancy Nathanson and only her. Well, I guess we could call up the good Senator Steiner Hayward. But, Senator, please keep your comments to the fiscal.
Happily, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from District 13. Oregon has provided a number of financial incentives to help recruit professional providers to work in rural and underserved communities, and these programs have been successful at increasing the number of practitioners who serve in those areas. Practitioners and students have access to about a dozen different state and federal programs, including tax credits, insurance subsidies, loan repayment, and loan forgiveness. All of those have dollar signs next to them, so this is, too, fiscal impact. These different incentives were set up at different times with different criteria. We need to make sure that we're giving the most of what we spend on incentives our best attention to recruit and retain healthcare professionals in these rural and underserved areas. The 2015 Legislative Assembly enacted House Bill 3396, creating the Healthcare Provider Incentive Fund, dollar signs next to it, it's a fund, to be administered by the Oregon Health Authority, and directed the Oregon Health Policy Board to evaluate the effectiveness of healthcare provider incentives and to produce recommendations for the legislature regarding continuing, restructuring, consolidating, or repealing any of those current incentives, prioritizing incentive funds to qualified providers, and considering new financial incentive programs. We now have those recommendations, and this bill implements the recommendations and technical changes to improve those incentives and provide the Health Policy Board with the tools and the authority to manage the programs in the incentive fund. The committee recommended restructuring some existing programs for greater effectiveness. Enhancing the flexibility of programs could maximize their impact. The Health Authority and the Healthcare Workforce Committee have started to implement recommendations already within the authority that they have, such as data sets and best practices for recruitment and retention. This bill gives the Health Policy Board access to information it needs to evaluate the effectiveness of the healthcare provider incentive programs and determine the best allocation. Going forward, the responsibility for reviewing the incentive programs and allocating money will be under the purview of the Health Policy Board. For the 17-19 biennium, as a transition period, the -A13 amendment allocates specific amounts to provider incentive programs while the Health Policy Board collects data and starts getting its processes in place to determine the best allocation of monies for the fund in the future. During the transition period, money is allocated to Rural Medical Practitioners Insurance Subsidy Program, Primary Care Provider Loan Repayment Fund, Scholars for Healthy Oregon Initiative, the Primary Healthcare Loan Forgiveness Program. It also allows them the direction to spend up to $1 million for additional scholarship programs and up to $1 million for other financial incentives that would fall under this purview, and also up to $4 million for the purposes of providing support for communities' plans for addressing unmet healthcare workforce needs. I want to underscore that this is a transition period. The monies allocated specifically here are just to make sure that these programs continue and allow the board the time to get its processes in place so that it will then, it does through this bill, has the authority and the flexibility to determine the appropriate amounts in the future. The use of these incentives to further encourage providers to practice in these underserved areas, combined with a more efficient and effective system, can help us get the health care we need, help Oregonians have access regardless of where they live. Quoting the Healthcare Workforce Committee report from just this last fall, quote, reworking our existing programs into a more flexible system of supports that can keep what works well, as well as offering new approaches, should yield even more effective returns on our investments, end quote. Senator Steiner Hayward is going to describe now the other half of the bill.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank Representative Nathanson for working with me and others over the past 4 years on this. I've had the privilege of working on these programs for well over a decade now, long before I was in the legislature. I want to talk about the new part of this bill, which was House Bill 3085, which many of you in the House Health Committee heard about, some of you in the Revenue Committee heard about briefly, and which is the part about training. While we have had incentives to help people enter training and, to some extent, after training to practice in certain areas, we have not had incentives to help establish new training programs, which are expensive to start. It costs $3 to $6 million to begin a new family medicine residency. The federal government puts caps on what they'll help pay for graduate medical education. We don't have enough social workers, enough psychologists, enough licensed therapists, enough licensed counselors, enough of a whole bunch of what we like to call critical access healthcare providers, the people you don't want to have to drive more than 50 miles to see, a term the late and dearly departed Senator Bates and I came up with back in 2007 when we were revamping the Med-Mal subsidy. So the pieces of this bill that are new are the parts that will have Oregon Health and Science University working with, under the direction of the Health Policy Board, establish guidelines for grant and loan programs to help communities establish new healthcare workforce training programs. We know that people tend to practice within 50 miles of where they train, and that's well borne out in the state already by our residency programs and by our other professional healthcare training programs. These programs are expensive to start. There's a program in Roseburg right now that's already hired several faculty members but doesn't have the money to completely kick off yet. This will offer those funds to help get that program up and running, to train providers in a community that desperately needs them and with a high likelihood that they will practice in areas either in Roseburg or like Roseburg, smaller communities that desperately need this help in our state. We envision a situation where rural communities in eastern Oregon could come together with advice and support from bigger universities in other parts of the state to establish social work programs, trainings for professional counselors, any kinds of providers that are recommended and advised by the healthcare workforce committee that's established in statute, and the funds would be available to pay for them. As Representative Nathanson said, you can expect to see us back here in 2 years with legislation to implement all the plans that have been outlined during the course of this. And that's what this money will be used for, is to build healthcare. We know that
physicians. We have data that show that physicians generate between $1 and $2 million of economic activity in their communities per year and create 5 to 7 living wage jobs. We believe that's also true for our nurse practitioners, our PAs. We know that having access to behavioral health in your location makes it much more likely that you'll access these services. And I urge your support for this bill.
Senator, how do you have so much experience with this?
It's a mystery to me, Representative. I have no idea. It just sort of came to me out of the blue.
Do you have any professional background?
Nope, none whatsoever.
Okay. Representative Buehler.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chair. I congratulate you both on working this bill and getting it to this point. I'm very, very supportive. I do have one really big concern, and I agree with everything you said about the need for more training programs, especially in primary care, behavioral health, and especially more need for those training programs in rural areas of the state for all the reasons you outlined. The problem with how this bill is drafted is there is no assurance that those training programs will be in the rural areas of the state. I think it's a big oversight. In addition, the organization that's going to be overseeing those training programs is OHSU. So can you assure me that those training programs will not be in downtown Portland as opposed to where they're really needed in the rest of the state where we have a shortage of primary care providers especially?
Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Buehler, thank you for the question. I appreciate your concern. I would point out, however, that we have significantly underserved areas in pretty much every part of the state. Your district, for example, desperately wants to bring 2 child psychiatry residents down from OHSU. There's a plan in place to do it, but we can't afford to pay for it yet. I think you would not disagree with me that Central Oregon desperately needs more access to child psychiatry, and Bend does not qualify as a rural area. So we would not be able to use these funds to support that important expansion of child psychiatry training into Central Oregon if this program solely focused on designated rural areas. Furthermore, some types of training will require participation in some more urban areas to make sure that there's a significant population that people can access for training. We have every expectation that the vast majority of these new programs will be located in parts of the state that are traditionally less well-served and have fewer training programs, but Medford, Grants Pass, Eugene, all of which could support residency programs, social work programs, psychology programs that don't have them now, and they're more dispersed than central, than downtown metro area, would not qualify if we solely limited this to rural areas. Even Baker in Ontario and Pendleton combined might qualify, but would be somewhat more questionable. Small rural areas alone cannot fully support these programs. We have to place some of them in somewhat more urban areas. Furthermore, I would point out that even in the Portland metro area, we have health professional shortage areas in parts of it due to the lack of adequate behavioral health care. I appreciate your concern, sir, and I've worked very, very hard over the past 15 years now, to improve access to health care in rural parts of the state. But I do not believe that limiting these programs in that way will actually meet the needs that we're trying to address to provide health services for every Oregonian.
Thank you both. We'll go ahead and call up Scott Ekblad and Doug Barber.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Scott Ekblad. I'm the director of the Oregon Office of Rural Health, which is located at OHSU, the office that has administered all the programs covered in this bill historically. Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, I'll be as brief as possible. I am very supportive of this bill for 2 reasons. Number one, because it institutes a process by which all of these programs have ongoing evaluation and determination on a biennial basis as to how to most efficiently and effectively spend the dollars allocated for these very important incentive programs. And number two, if the bill doesn't pass, they all go away. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ekblad. Mr. Barber.
Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, Doug Barber here today on behalf of the Oregon Rural Health Association in support of the bill. We've worked closely with Representative Nathanson and Senator Steiner Hayward on this during the entire session and previously. What was kind of most important to us in this bill was the kind of two factors. One, that there's funding for the programs that already exist that have proven to be effective. That funding is there in Section 4 of the bill. We also wanted flexibility with that, to come with that funding. And that flexibility comes in a couple of different ways. It gives the Oregon Health Policy Board the flexibility, if all of the funds that are in those line items are not needed for a program. So, for example, there's $1 million in the budget for the loan forgiveness program. As programs like Scholars for Healthy Oregon grow, the demand for other programs like loan forgiveness shrinks. That's to be expected. So we don't know. I mean, it may be that that full million will be needed during this biennium, but maybe it's only 800 or 900,000. And so now the Oregon Health Policy Board will have the flexibility to move that additional, that remaining money, over to another program like loan repayment that is oversubscribed. So we think this is an effective framework. We look forward to working with the Oregon Health Policy Board and their Workforce Committee on a longer-term mechanism and allocations to refine these programs. Happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Hayden.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. In some cases, it seems that the Oregon Health Policy Board's policy when it comes to the legislature is somewhat ignored or run over. Do you think that that is gaining in kind of influence on legislation? Meaning, if Oregon Health Policy puts together proposed legislation, that it will stay kind of close to that?
Co-chairs, Representative Hayden, we've worked closely with the Healthcare Workforce Committee in previous years, and I think with this new fund, they're going to have their work cut out for them. It's a lot to help establish all these training programs and put in place the rules that will be needed to make those work effectively, as well as to look at to evaluate the workforce needs around the state and then try to match up the incentive programs that we have or new incentive programs that they might look at to try to best meet those needs. So I think there's a lot of work to be done there. We look forward to working with them on that. And I am optimistic that the Workforce Committee can then take that information to the Health Policy Board and bring it back here to be implemented.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm going to support the bill, strong supporter for getting more access to rural Oregon, but we're going to be watching the concerns. It seems historically that there's always a metropolitan unmet need that overrides the rural Oregon's ability to compete in these programs. So, thank you.
With that, Madam Chair, I move adoption of the -A13 amendment to House Bill 3261.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves adoption of the A13 amendment to House Bill 3261. Is there further discussion? Is there any opposition? If not, so moved.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3261 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves House Bill 3261 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? If not, so moved. I don't know if Co-Chair Nathanson will be chairing, so why don't I take it to full? She can take it to the House floor, and I'll take it to the Senate floor. Thank you. Okay, close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3261. Open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2684. Looks like I've got Kendall Mason, Joanne Furman, and Arna, I'm not going to pronounce this right, Karen Mudrick. Did I get that right? Come on up, folks, while Ms. Byerly explains what we're talking about.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, you have information on OLIS today for this bill, which deals with providers in the intellectual and developmental disabilities arena. The original bill had a lot of requirements in place around wages paid to direct support professionals in facilities and a bunch of requirements around facilities as far as what they do operationally and some, I think, enhanced oversight of the facilities under the department's purview.
Thank you. Whoever wants to start may start.
Yeah. Right. Good morning. Co-chairs Steiner Hayward, co-chair Rayfield, members of the committee. My name is Joanne Furman. I'm the co-founder and co-director of Partnerships and Community Living. We're a private nonprofit that serves people with IDD across Oregon. Today I'm testifying on behalf of the Oregon Rehabilitation Association and as a part of the work group that led the Dash 3 amendments. I want to thank Representative Peloso, Representative Hack, Senator Gelsler for their participation and support of this work group, and Representative Kenny Geyer for convening us together. Our interest and my personal interest in serving this group was to find consensus on policy decisions and, most importantly, to advocate for fair wages, competitive wages for our DSPs that work across the state. As you know, DSPs provide supports to people with IDD to live safely in their communities and help us provide a stable workforce to keep people safe. We want to thank you for your commitment to raising wages and acknowledge the increase that we reflected in yesterday's IDD budget. It was a major commitment to moving us forward on wages, and we really, I just want to provide you a sincere thank you. It makes a big difference for the people we support and for our DSPs. The participants in this work group, all represented here today, worked really hard to come together to represent, to bill that would help further our goals. The Dash 3 amendments represent our ongoing collective commitment to quality services and fair wages for the people we support. I just want to give you just kind of a brief overview of what those are and then provide other people an opportunity to chat. So this group, what we came together was to support higher DSP wages and reduce turnover on the stability of our workforce. One of those things that we'll be doing is increasing our annual fees that will be dedicated to online training that will help DSPs in their career development and provide a stable workforce. We want to maintain our long-term commitment to transparency and accountability, and we agreed to additional requirements to that end, and a commitment to continue these discussions in the interim around protective service, including abuse findings, fines, and the resulting consequences. Really, ultimately, we all agreed that's what's most important is that the people with IDD are safe, well-protected, and our systems designed to assure that. We believe the final product reflects an important investment in DSPs and our state providers and our goal to enhance our transparency. So I really appreciate your time and effort. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And folks, I'm just going to remind you.
Hi.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, and members of the committee. My name is Anna Keenan Mudrick. I'm the Executive Director of Community Access Services, and I'm here representing CPAO, Community Provider Association of Oregon. I've met with several of you before, and I just need to give my quick apology. I'm a little sleepy because I had a cat pass away after she was 20 years old last night, so I'm sorry but I'm less energetic than usual. I just wanted to explain that. But it might benefit us as far as, you know, my brevity. So there we go.
We're sorry.
I'm typically more verbose.
You know how hard that is.
Yeah, it's hard. But Community Provider Association of Oregon is here in support of House Bill 2684 and, of course, the amendments, the Dash 3 amendments. And we were very appreciative and thankful for the opportunity to partner with this incredible, passionate stakeholder group that includes ORA, SEIU, several legislators, which was really useful, and with the support and information that was really useful from ODDS. So it was a pretty powerful, dynamic process that was very useful. And, you know, really, again, our goal was to merge three really critical bills, very focused on DSP, direct support professional, workforce stability, a lot of health and safety concerns around all of that, and as Joanne really adequately described, focuses on other accountability measures that are also very important. And it really showed us, too, that we have a lot of shared goals, so it was a nice opportunity for us to kind of talk through those. Again, the primary focus of this, DSP wages, workforce stability, training and credentialing, and also program accountability. Finally, I just want to say a big thank you for the $13.5 million that will really help us in beginning to help address the DSP wage crisis that, of course, impacts the health and safety of those who we support, children and adults who experience intellectual and developmental disabilities. And I really look forward to continuing to work with you all more in the coming sessions on making further progress in this area. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kendall Mason, and I'm a policy and political strategist for SEIU. I did submit a longer testimony, which I will not read through or go through at this moment.
Thank you.
I would just like to echo what Joanne and Anna have both said, that this process took about 6 weeks, and I'd like to thank the representatives Peluso and Hack for participating, and Gelser for keeping tabs on us and making sure we're doing good work, and for Representative Kenny Geyer for convening the group. We did a lot of great work together. I think that it represents what can happen when two opposing sides come together at the table and try to work through and find their common ground. And we really feel like this bill is a step in the right direction for Oregon. It's really going to help ODDS and the legislature in general kind of understand the system of services and supports, and we're just really proud of the work.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
your time.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 3 Amendment.
Co-Chair Rayfield moves adoption of the Dash 3 Amendment to House Bill 2684. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? If not, so moved.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2684 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves House Bill 2684 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? If not, so moved. Full?
That works.
Do you want to do this on the House?
Peluso, since she worked in the workroom.
Oh, yeah.
Peluso? That would make
sense. Okay, Representative Peluso in the House and Senator Gelser in the Senate. Okay, close the public hearing and work session on 2684, open on 3440. And folks, we've got about 7 to 10 minutes, so we're going to have to rock and roll on this one. It's opening a public hearing only. I hope I was clear about that on this one. And I don't know if Representative Williamson's coming. I'm working on this bill too, so one of us will say something. I'll say something briefly after Ms. Reinhold.
Thank you. Co-chairs, members of the committee, HB 3440 removes special training requirements from the statutes governing prescribing, dispensing, and distributing naloxone, and requires OHA to publish and report information related to opiates and opiates. There's a Dash A4 amendment that's recommended that makes some clarifications regarding payment reimbursement. And there's also a Dash A5 amendment that adds the provisions of HB 2518 to make changes to the prescription drug monitoring program, including establishing a subcommittee to advise OHA on interpreting prescription information and the necessity of practitioner training.
Thanks. I think I'm just going to pass and let the witnesses go. Dr. Lewis?
Great. My name is Paul Lewis. I'm Multnomah County Health Officer here in support of this bill. So co-chairs Hayward and Senator Hayward and Rayfield. We had a brief overview of 3440 from our legislative staff. I could go through that more. The original bill has had some minor modifications from the insurers. It doesn't have a fiscal impact. It does a number of small things, which are all part of a larger effort to decrease harms from the misuse of prescription and illegal opioids. I did bring a little visual aid here. Now, this is sort of the modern version of naloxone. I've asked our lobbyist, Claudia Black, to share this with different members. It's a newer product. It's extremely intuitive. It's easier than using an Afrin nose spray, and it can reverse a fatal overdose. And that's part of the reason and rationale behind removing Oregon's
relatively heavy training requirements and physician or nurse practitioner oversight, since we think the crisis has increased and the ease of using naloxone has improved so much. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
We'll let all the other witnesses testify, and then we'll go back to questions. Thank you.
Good morning, co-chair, members of the committee. I'm Haven Wheelock. I'm the program coordinator for the syringe exchange at Outside In, which was actually the first naloxone distribution program in the state. I just want to speak to the ease of training for naloxone. I've trained over 1,000 people, many of whom are drug users, as well as parents and community members, to have, carry, and use naloxone. These trainings that we have are really effective, and we hold them, but I don't believe that the training requirements under the state law is what is needed to ensure that people can use naloxone. It is a safe and effective medicine. I would say that, for the most part, people are able to understand how to do it, and it's really kind of foolproof. By having state requirements, we're required to train on certain topics, and it misses the opportunity to train in other ways around other things around it. So I support this bill.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Melissa Arnold. I'm program supervisor for the apartments at Bud Clark Commons. That's a permanent, and I work for Home Forward, which is our housing authority serving Multnomah County. I'm obviously testifying in favor of House Bill 3440. The apartments at Bud Clark Commons is a permanent supportive housing project for our community's most chronically ill and chronically homeless individuals. We are located in Old Town. That's near the epicenter of Portland's both homeless crisis as well as opioid epidemic. So we deal with substance abuse and substance use every day, my staff and I. Overdoses occur frequently in Old Town. I intend to submit written testimony that will further illustrate this point, but just to illustrate, there was recently an overdose across the street from our building, and at that time, a man was on the ground. He was surrounded by friends who were scared, and they ran to our building because we're the ones that they run to when they need help. We're right there. They trust us. And we didn't have Narcan, nor did anybody in the area. We ran around yelling, Narcan, Narcan. Anybody have Narcan? We're running to the bus station, Narcan. Does anybody have Narcan? No. Meanwhile, this man's on the ground, less and less likely to survive. I had to run up 4 flights of stairs into a group meeting, yelling, Narcan, anybody. And one of my residents ran to her room, rummaged through some items, found one vial of Narcan but no syringe. Then I had to run downstairs, out the door, and by that time, nearly 20 minutes had passed, and this man's ability to survive, to recover, decreased with each minute that passed. And so if providers like myself, providers like my staff, have access to this easy-to-use and relatively simple tool, we can save lives and increase people's ability to recover, reducing barriers to access for organizations such as mine. In the form of reducing special training requirements, it gets us closer to this goal.
Okay. Before anybody else says anything, please tell me you called 911 before you
arrived. Of course.
Okay. And hopefully it didn't take them 20 minutes to arrive.
Unfortunately, in Portland right now, our response time is it's something that our community is working on, but it can take up to 20 minutes for us to get support.
Okay, and to clarify, you're not saying that no training is needed. You're just saying that the requirements that are currently listed are not the ones that needed. And you're not saying you're going to give this drug out without explaining to people the importance of calling EMS and that the opiates last longer in the system than naloxone does and stuff like that, right?
Of course.
All of that's going to happen still.
Yes, of course.
Okay, thank you. Representative Buehler?
Yeah. I'm very supportive of this and what you're trying to do. Here's my big concern. And I think easing the training requirements is great. But with the influx that is expected of fentanyl and the artificial derivatives, I'm very concerned that unless people get training, that just one dose of Narcan is not effective, that you have to give a dose and you have to monitor and you have to look for signs of re-overdosing. that people are going to have a false sense of success with one dose. So to eliminate all training, I think, is a overreach. And there's nothing in the current version of this that says that you're going to do the appropriate type of training with regards to monitoring people, especially as these very powerful opioid derivatives hit the streets of Portland. I think it is too much, and I would really encourage you to look at that again and have some sort of required training. I certainly think easing back on it is a good idea, but right now you could start giving it out. Maybe you would do a good job with appropriate training. It doesn't mean that everyone would. So.
Representative Buehler, I really appreciate that concern. I feel like we have two separate pressures on us. We've been relatively lucky in Oregon in that we have relatively little fentanyl right now. It kind of comes in little spikes. Places like Ohio that had 100 overdoses in 4 hours have really seen the dark side. And so I think because of the greater potency and the need for additional doses is important, we also want to make sure there's a lot of Narcan out there in the environment. And that's the kind of the impetus behind it. And our state laws is one of the stricter in the country because it requires training oversight by a physician or a nurse practitioner, and that's sort of a fairly high bar that an agency sometimes can't meet. So again, I think with pharmacist dispensing, the pharmacists are providing information like they do with all drugs when they dispense them, and then when community-based organizations do that, they're not just handing it out; they're handing it out to people who want it and explaining how it gets used.
But
certainly,
and certainly, I think easing the training requirements, totally agree. But how you've drafted this bill, that there's no requirement for any kind of education or training. So, I think we've gone too far the other way with this. It's a small fix. I'm concerned at this point in this rapid fire process that we've entered to in the legislature that we're not doing enough due diligence, having enough input on these types of complex issues. And I don't know why you would be opposed to at least handing out appropriate training with the dispensing of these medications. So,
yeah, again, there's no opposition to training. It's about decreasing the barriers, especially for the community-based organizations, and eliminating the licensed practitioner oversight.
Dr. Lewis, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's federal law. You have to hand out written instructions when you hand out a prescription drug. And naloxone, whether it's given out with or without a prescription, is still a drug controlled by the FDA. And it's still a drug that requires a quote-unquote prescription, even though Oregon has made it available without a prescription, right? So you still have to hand out written instructions.
That's correct.
Isn't that correct? Mm-hmm. By federal law?
So. Senator Steiner-Hayward, I certainly normal pharmacy practices that you don't get a new prescription without getting your counseling over on this side. Products like this, the commercially available products, come with, they're built into it. You can't get to it without opening the instructions. And then my understanding of all the community-based organizations that we've worked with is that it's typically part of a combined harm reduction training education opportunity for recovery package, as opposed to like there's a cabinet over there, go grab one. And I believe these guys could speak to that as well.
Okay. I Representative Buehler, I get your concern.
Another point.
Okay. Really quick.
Yeah.
I want to get through the last few witnesses so we can get our public hearing done, too.
I just want to, are you supportive of the dash six amendment submitted by Senator Steiner-Hayward?
I believe was the
that's the one that puts 2518.
Correct, right. That yes, very supportive of a comprehensive approach to this problem, including, you know, every year we've made enhancements to the PDMP, and I believe that in the modern organization of healthcare, that especially the medical director and pharmacy director access and an educational component by the OHA are, you know, part of a comprehensive approach to decreasing the harm from prescription opioids.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Holton, Ms. Dresser. Really quick, folks, so everybody can hang for about 3 more minutes, and I'm going to ask Mr. Holton and Ms. Dresser to really keep it tight. Thank you, because I'd like to finish this hearing today.
Good morning. Courtney Dresser for the Oregon Medical Association. Good morning, Chair Steiner Hayward, Chair Rayfield, and members of the committee. We're here in support of the A6 amendments, which is the, as we mentioned, House Bill 2518, which is a bill we've been working on with Representative Buehler and Senator Steiner Hayward and others over the last year to streamline some of the and enhance the prescription drug monitoring program, which is housed under the Oregon Health Authority. This is a great tool for our provider community to use to provide better patient care and managing their prescriptions. The A6 optimizes the PDMP by streamlining registration with the board, licensure, granting medical directors access for quality assurance, encourages interoperability between states, and adds naloxone to be monitored prescription and creates a clinician review subcommittee to identify prescribers in need of education through the Oregon Health Authority of the recent CDC and Oregon adopted prescribing guidelines. The fiscal is an other funds fiscal. The PDMP is funded by a fee on prescribers and pharmacists, and the funds are available to implement any to use for any implementation cost of the A6. We would encourage you to adopt the A6 into House Bill 3440.
Thank you. Mr. Holton.
Dwight Holton, CEO of Lines for Life. Co-chairs, members of the committee, I'm delighted to be here today in support of the A6 amendment. As many of you know, we've been conducting prescription drug abuse summits around the state, and one of the things we have consistently heard from doctors and other prescribers at these summits is, if you want my attention, send me a letter from the board or the IRS. And at the core, what they're getting at is the need for a peer assessment of their prescribing practices. 20% of the prescribers prescribe close to 80% of the opioids in Oregon. We think this peer review component is especially important. We applaud the OMA for its support. I would also just bring the committee's attention to an op-ed today in the Oregonian from three moms. I am sick and tired of meeting moms and dads of people who have lost, moms and dads of kids who have died in the opioid crisis. These three moms, who were moms of these three fellows right here, Max Pinsky, Jordan Strickland, and Jim Jones, have penned an op-ed urging action on both 2518, on the language here, would create the peer review and improve the PDMP, but also on the opioid disposal bill, which is currently sitting in Ways and Means. So I would add their voices on their behalf in support of the A6 amendments.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you both very much. Okay, with that, I'm closing the public hearing on 3440. I want to thank the committee and all the witnesses for your efficiency today. This was an ambitious agenda, and we got through it all, and you saved yourselves from a 4:30 or a 6 o'clock meeting tonight. We will be back tomorrow morning, 8:30, with what may be the last meeting of this subcommittee for this year. So with that, anything else to your knowledge? Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.